We've been working our way through these chapters in the book of Exodus, these very interesting chapters that speak about the furnishings for the tabernacle and the building of the tabernacle itself. And so far into chapter 26, we've seen the coverings for the tabernacle, four different layers of coverings. We've seen the boards and sort of the framing for it. Now, in this ending section of chapter 26, we have two special barriers. First, the veil, and then the screen. Let's begin with the veil, starting at verse 31, chapter 26.
It says, "You shall make a veil woven of blue, purple, and scarlet thread, and fine woven linen. It shall be woven with an artistic design of cherubim. You shall hang it upon the four pillars of acacia wood overlaid with gold. Their hooks shall be gold upon four sockets of silver. And you shall hang the veil from the clasps. Then you shall bring the Ark of the Testimony in there behind the veil. The veil shall be a divider for you between the holy place and the most holy."
This is fascinating. The tabernacle building itself was divided into two compartments. What does it describe it there? The one place was called the holy place. The second compartment, smaller, was called the most holy place.
Or holy of holies.
Or holy of holies, that's right. In between the two parts of it stood this thing that we call the veil. All right, so what was the veil? What was it made of?
Well, it says here that it was woven of blue, purple, and scarlet thread and fine woven linen.
And it had the figures of cherubim on it. Now, again, we just showed people a model of it. We don't know the pattern.
Right.
We don't know the exact color scheme, although we're given a general reference to it. We don't know what they depicted the cherubim like exactly, so artists can have different depictions of it in the modern day. But there stood this fabric barrier. Are we talking about something very, when you say veil, I kind of think of something very light and airy.
Yeah, I think of a curtain, something thin, easy to move,
right.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to say how thick it was back then, but we know from historians and from the Jews,
right,
that the veil that stood in the temple was close to four fingers thick.
You're talking several inches
very thick. Very heavy.
Right.
It's hard to say how thick it was here, but there it was.
Well, as much as anything, it was supposed to stand as a barrier. To say what? To say,
don't
you
enter.
You can't come any further than this. Now, this is fascinating because you have this veil. It's in the tabernacle. Who could go on the other side of that veil?
The high priest.
How often could he do it?
But only once a year, on the Day of Atonement.
Wow.
When he offered the atonement for his sin and the sins of the people.
And what did he do? Did he just throw back the veil, walk in and say, "Here I am, God"?
Yeah. No, he approached it humbly. He approached it with fear. It was a big deal when approaching the Ark of the Covenant, entering inside of the Holy of Holies.
Yeah.
That was a big deal. In fact, they had the bells around the priestly garments just to make sure that he's still alive.
And there are reports that they would tie a rope to his foot, and the end of the rope would be outside of the Holy of Holies so that if he collapsed dead, they could drag him out without having to go in and send in an extraction team to get him out of there.
Yeah.
So this was a heavy thing. The last thing in the world there was this idea of open access to the presence of God. This was the throne room of God itself, and there's a barrier there saying, "Stay out."
Which is so interesting because we have these representations. We have this table of showbread, which weirdly speaks of intimacy.
Right.
Face to face.
The idea of the tabernacle, that I may dwell among you.
I want to be here. I want to be here. I want to talk to you, and speak to you. And yet at this very same time, but I'm very different than you, and I am wholly separate than you, and you can't even come in here.
Come close, but not too close.
Yeah, it's so...
There is this combination of welcoming, but a barrier.
Yeah.
Now, what happens to this veil? Obviously, you go from the tabernacle to the temple. There's a veil in the temple between the holy place and the most holy place.
Mm-hmm.
What happened eventually to that veil in the temple?
Well, they had to wash it a few times. I don't know. Of course, upon the cross, Jesus Christ, we see that day when he cried.
Matthew chapter 27.
That veil was torn in two.
Torn in two?
Man.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
And who tore it in two?
It says that God did. Well, we know that because it was torn from top to bottom and not bottom to top.
That's what Matthew says, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Now, when you appreciate the meaning of the veil, There's a barrier between God and man. Yeah. Come to me, but not too close. Yeah. What does it mean that at the death of Jesus, the veil is torn open wide?
Well, there's no more barrier.
Come on in. Come on into the closeness of my presence. Yeah. Come into the most holy place. Hmm. Well, I mean, it's really staggering to think of it in those terms.
In the same way, the idea of, we talk about the idea, this is a pattern of heaven, that in some way, Jesus entered into the heavenly Holy of Holies with his blood, offering it to his Father or something.
Now, the priest would do it in the Old Testament times. I mean, we can kind of show a graphic of that that kind of shows on the model, that shows there's the priest on the Day of Atonement ministering there at the Ark of the Covenant. He could do that. But the believer, what kind of access do we have? Yeah. All the time. That veil is torn. Mm. But by the way, isn't it depressing to think that there are some Christians who would sew that veil up again? Yeah. And prevent people from coming to Jesus. Prevent them from entering into the most holy place. No, it's like it's wide open for
or
us.
Or even worse is that they prevent themselves.
Yeah.
Not only do they push people back and prevent them from coming, but they even prevent themselves from drawing near to God.
That's terrible. Yeah. You know, he's opened it wide. So don't stop at the altar. Don't stop at the laver. Don't stop at the altar of incense. Don't even stop at the table of showbread. All those things are great, but go right on through into the holiest of all.
With boldness.
With boldness. Isn't that what it says in Hebrews?
Yeah.
This is a huge theme in the book of Hebrews, isn't it?
Yeah.
You can just imagine what a profound thing it was when that veil tore in the temple. By the way, we know from the book of Acts that many priests came to faith. Hmm. Now, if you were a priest in Israel and saw that temple veil get torn in two, wouldn't that blow your mind? That would obviously be real.
You want to close your eyes, maybe avert, like, I don't want to look.
Yes. Fascinating. Okay, let's read on, starting now at verse 34, where we talk about the arrangement of the furniture.
So you shall put the mercy seat upon the ark of the testimony in the most holy. You shall set the table outside the veil, the lampstand across from the table on the side of the tabernacle toward the south, and you shall put the table on the north side.
Okay, so things were arranged in the tabernacle sort of according to this theme, where you have the veil. If you walked in through the door of the tabernacle, you'd see the veil in front of you. On your right, you would see what?
You'd have the showbread.
Table of showbread. On your left, you would see?
Lampstand.
And then, I wish I had a good answer for this. Mm. In front of you, you'd also see the altar of incense. Do you realize he doesn't describe the altar of incense to us in these chapters that we're covering? Mm. Not in 25, not in 26, not in 27, not in 28. I don't know why. Mm. It's an important part of the tabernacle furniture. He doesn't describe it for us until later. Do you guys got an answer?
Maybe you forgot.
No. There's a deliberate and a good reason why God didn't. But for some reason, God didn't describe to them. Yeah. I mean, obviously, it's an important piece, but not yet. He wants to give it a special place, a special prominence. And so we sort of have a pictorial depiction for people of what this would look like, the arrangement that's described in verses 34 and 35. But then we move on to it. Because the next thing that's described is the screen.
Yeah.
Now, but before we read those verses, let's just clarify. What's the difference between the screen and the veil?
The veil was that barrier between the holy place and the most holy place.
Right.
And the screen was the barrier between the priest entering the tabernacle, in a sense.
Kind of like this. The screen is the exterior door. You go from the outside in. The veil was an interior door going from one room to another. Okay, good. Let's read it.
You keep using the word door, but then there weren't really actual doors. It might have been just like they had us push these
tent
veils.
Tent flaps.
Up. Yeah.
I mean, I think that's how it functioned.
Yeah. Zippers?
No. Velcro? No. I think it's just a tent flap. Yeah. They just moved it back. Mm. Yeah. So, okay. Verses 36 and 37.
Okay, so you shall make a screen door for the door, a screen for the door of the tabernacle, woven of blue, purple, and scarlet thread, and fine woven linen, and made by a weaver. And you shall make for the screen five pillars of acacia wood, overlay them with gold. Their hooks shall be gold, and you shall cast five sockets of bronze for them. So I guess some little different elements, but some similarities.
Little different, different tops for them. Now, mm-hmm. what I find fascinating, the exterior door or tent flap, the screen, had five yeah. pillars. The interior one, the veil, had four pillars. Why?
Let's see.
Honestly, I don't quite know. Maybe some of our viewers could send us suggestions as to they know why.
Maybe it's in God's wisdom. The outside needed to be a little stronger than the inside, so he put five pillars instead of four pillars, maybe?
Maybe so. That could be it, but you have a difference here. Five pillars on the outside and four pillars, not quite the same design, but close. I mean, similar, but not exactly the same. And we got sort of a pictorial picture of it right up there. You can see the five pillars out front, the four pillars in the back with the veil, and behind that veil, the Holy of Holies. If someone was looking at things from the outside, it would sort of have this kind of pictorial representation. It would look like this. You'd see that covering. Mm-hmm. You'd see you wouldn't see much of the boards. They'd be covered. But then you'd see the pillars and then the screen. That's where the priest would enter on into through the thing.
What's interesting, though, is that we talked about momentarily ago how the tabernacle was resting upon the silver foundations for the redemption.
Right.
Yet here, you know, just a chance or, you know, the reason here in verse 37, but these outer five pillars were sitting in sockets of bronze.
Yeah, it's interesting. Okay, we talk about gold being like a just glory and heaven in this. Silver speaking of redemption. It was the redemption prize. What's bronze speak of?
Is it judgment?
Yes, judgment? Yes. Why? Why would bronze be a metal associated with judgment?
I don't know. I'm thinking maybe, I have no idea.
Well, it's an alloy that's made in the fire. I'm no metallurgist, so I can't describe, but I know that it's an alloy that's made in the fire. Of course, fire is used in the processing of silver and gold, but not the same way as bronze. So it's associated with heat and fire and judgment. Wow. So think about it. On the base of the very entrance, there you have judgment. Something's been judged. Or should I say, someone has been judged in the place. Back in the Old Testament economy, they would know it as the sacrificial animals because the whole system of sacrifice was outside of that tabernacle door. But we see it fulfilled in Jesus Christ.
Wow.
Yes. He is our path of entrance. You can't even go into the presence of God without recognizing and seeing that work of sacrifice that Jesus Christ has done on our behalf. That's what it hangs on for us.
Wow.
All right. Excellent, excellent ideas here from the tabernacle. We'll push the pause button here. Pick it up next time as we start at chapter 27 and consider more of the articles and the building and the construction of this tabernacle and its system.